Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Don't you just love it?
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Very superstitious.
Everyone, 8:04 the time, hour two here on Sports 56 Mornings, the Thursday, April 9th, 2026 edition. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Jay Hamm with you, broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. They got their spring sale going on right now at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. We're at 59 degrees, going to get up to 81 today. Clouds and sun, but a really nice day. Yesterday was so beautiful. Yesterday, if I could bottle that up, that's the weather I would want every single day of my life. Tonight, clear skies, a low of 57 degrees. And then tomorrow, we're looking at 83 for a high. Saturday could set a record. 86 is the projected high. Again, a lot of sunshine over the weekend. We won't see any precip more than likely until early next week. Hour two of the program brought to you by the great folks at James Gattis Jewelers. If you've lived here long enough in Memphis, you've probably been to James Gattis Jewelers. They've been serving Memphians and Mid-Southerners for 60 years. Started out on Summer Avenue way back when, but they've been at their East Memphis location for more than half of that time now, over 30 years. 4900 Poplar between Mendenhall and St. Nick, and on the web at GattisJewelers.com. They are your bridal, engagement, and anniversary jeweler headquarters. For those beautiful diamond engagement rings, natural earth diamonds, lab-grown diamonds, think James Gattis Jewelers. Make sure they are one of the jewelers you check out. They have a price point to suit everybody's budget. They are really good at what they do. James has all the credentials you want. He's in your jeweler. He's a master jeweler, a certified appraiser, a diamondologist. He's graded by the Gemologist Institute of America. They go over to Antwerp, Belgium. That's where they get the diamonds every year. Bring them back. The variety that they have. And again, the price point that suits everyone's budget. For those beautiful diamond engagement rings, wedding rings, personally designed wedding sets, it's James Gattis Jewelers. For all your other jewelry needs, watches and necklaces and bracelets and pendants, one-of-a-kind estate and vintage jewelry, antique jewelry, they're always adding to their collection. They're also full-service jewelers with two bench jewelers ready to serve you. James Gattis Jewelers, open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, Saturday, 10 to 4, closed on Sunday. We'll give you a Masters update in a second. Right now, it's a throwback Thursday at Augusta National when we tell you about the leaderboard. But very early, of course, in round number one. Got a couple of texts. Jarvo, our good friend, he says, "Whoa, Eli, fans do care. Nobody wants to pay for this crap halfway through the season. You can say that's the way of the world." Shout out Earth, Wind, and Fire. I love that. "We say the world is what we make of it. You try writing that check and see how much you don't care."
Again, I'll say this. I said this yesterday. Fans care about the team. They want the team to be good. You want your team to be good and competitive and everything else. When you realize your team's not any good, they understand the tanking part of it and try and improve your chances of becoming good. Like, there are a lot of fans going to the Grizzlies games that are cheering for the Grizzlies to lose the game. They want them to lose because they understand, like, our best chance of improving and getting better is by losing.
They're not literally booing at the games, are they, when they make a shot or something like that?
No,
right?
But okay. They're there wanting.
I haven't been to one in a while. I mean,
they want to see an entertaining game, all that stuff. But mm-hmm. In the end, they would probably prefer the Grizzlies lose the game because they
right.
get it.
Right.
Again, what I'm saying, I don't think fans care about tanking nearly as much as the league believes the fans care about it, because the fans understand it. When your team is bad, your best chance of getting better, which is what fans want, is their team to be good. They understand, how do we get better? Well, we get a better draft pick, and that's how we get better. And so
it's all about the look.
They get it. And so the problems fans have, from anybody that I've talked to or anything else, with the Grizzlies right now is not that they're tanking and they're not playing their best players in games at the end of games, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of other issues people have with the Grizzlies organization. They get the idea of what they're doing in these games in order to try and lose them. They
right.
completely understand that.
But from a league standpoint, it's all about the look and the perception from outside the NBA. When people who are sports fans in general, or maybe just lukewarm basketball fans, and are going, wait a minute, This is the highest level of basketball played in the world. And you're telling me that there's a bunch of teams right now that are trying to lose? That's what Silver is concerned about. The whole image of the NBA. The look. The perception of what's going on with the league.
Got a text. Again, and as I said, I understand from his perspective, he has to try and do something about it. That's why, again, I think these proposals that don't do really, I don't think will have really any effect are the things they've come up with is, no, we're doing something about it. But they also understand, like, we have to give these bad teams an avenue to get better to give those fans hope.
Right. Right. Brett texts in. He said, maybe the bottom teams can only get the top lottery pick every 4 years.
See, I do. I have no problem with something of limiting how often you could get it. You know, people brought up that it would not, you know, what if Dallas gets it again this year? They should not be allowed to get it. And I have no problem with doing something like that, like saying, listen, yeah, like you can't, if you get the number one pick 1 year, the highest you could go the next year is whatever number. Because if you've gotten the number one overall pick, you don't need to be getting it again the following year. Like if you should be able to improve off of that, and that's your thing. So I have no qualms if there was something done like that to limit it, whatever number they want to come up with and how often you could get it. That would not be a problem at all for me.
Well, let me ask our basketball historian, do you know, this is a tough question, but in this century, so since 2000, how many of the teams that had the worst record got the number one pick?
I don't know. I definitely don't know. Definitely. You know, I can guess probably. You say since 2000, we've been at 25 drafts. I'll say 10.
Yeah, I don't have an answer. I would
guess it's lower than that.
I wouldn't be surprised.
For on Calci, I'm buying lower.
Yeah. Like I can tell you. I can tell you. Here's what I'll tell you. I'll tell you the team, okay, and who they picked number one overall since 2000. Now I don't know if they had the worst record. Okay, so we go back to 2000. It was the New Jersey Nets. It was Kenyon Martin. The Wizards in 2001. That great player, that Hall of Famer, Kwame Brown. 2002, the Rockets took Yao Ming.
They definitely weren't the worst.
Cavaliers in 2003, LeBron James. And, of course, if the Grizzlies had won the lottery, LeBron wouldn't have come. Shut up, LeBron.
Like Eli said, you don't say no to Jerry West.
Yeah, shut up. Orlando Magic in 2004 took Dwight Howard. The Bucks in 2005 took Andrew Bogut. The Raptors in 2006 took Andrea Bargnani. In 2007, Portland took Greg Oden. Man, a lot of these were misses. That was an injury, of course. 2008, the Bulls took Derrick Rose. Clippers in 2009, Blake Griffin. Wizards in 2010, you've talked about the John Wall pick. Cavs in 2011, Kyrie. The Hornets in 2012, Anthony Davis. The Cavs come right back in 2013, 2 years later. So again, according to Brett in his text, you wouldn't allow this now. But they took Anthony Bennett. That was a whiff. Then they got the first pick in 2014 and got Andrew Wiggins. So the Cavaliers had the number one pick in 2011, 2013, and 2014. That's when the Gilbert, the son,
that's
with
when
the
Dan
little bow
Gilbert's
tie,
son used to go.
He was the good luck charm.
In one of those years, that they got Tristan Thompson at like four. I think that was 2013 when they got him at four. So they got four lottery picks within that slate of just like 11 to 14.
Wow. 2015, Timberwolves, Carl Anthony Towns. Okay. 2016, the Sixers took Ben Simmons. That didn't work out. Sixers got it again in 2017. So back-to-back, and they took Markelle Fultz.
Sam Hinkie era right there.
Yeah, that didn't work out. Suns in 2018, DeAndre Ayton. Pelicans 2019 with Zion. 2020 was Anthony Edwards, Minnesota. Pistons, Cade Cunningham, 2021. Great pick, right? Looks great. Paolo Banchero, 2022 for Orlando. Spurs get Victor Wembanyama. Spurs. 2024, the Hawks with Zachary Richichet. Not so sure about that one yet. And the Mavs, 2025, take Cooper Flagg. So there were all your number one picks and the teams that had those number one picks. But where they finished, we'll have to do some homework for that.
Right. A lot of them, if they weren't at the very bottom, they were close.
Oh, they had to be close.
Yeah. But it was a few that weren't, they weren't as bad. They just got good luck.
Oh, some were big upsets. Yeah.
Since the changes in 2019, the team with the worst record has never won the top pick.
Since 2019? Okay.
Which that's what Utah was going so hard for last year, and they end up getting fourth.
So maybe you don't want to have the worst record,
they went,
right?
As from in three straight years, they fell. They didn't even get in the top four. The worst record fell to number five, which is low as you can fall. In the pre-2019 era, prior to the team with the worst record had only won four times since the lottery's inception in 1985.
Since 85?
So four times, I guess, all time that the worst record has gotten the. As one.
Is that right? Since 1985, the worst team's only gotten the number one pick four times?
Because back in the 80s, where they had the envelopes in the thing, everybody had the same record. Then they just had the four, however many envelopes in the tumbler, and he reached in and grabbed the envelope. So everybody did have the same odds, I think, if I remember correctly.
And it won as many teams for that as well.
I like the old envelopes.
That 85, that's the Patrick Ewing draft, right? So,
oh, yes, it was.
That was... I always look at that one as being manipulated for New York. So,
the conspiracies are out there in certain drafts.
If you're just reaching into a hopper and grabbing envelopes, it's a little easier to rig something than what they do now.
True.
When you're drawing out lottery ping pong ball combinations.
Right.
And again, I still the idea that it's rigged now, that's a lot of people in that room going in on it, including every team. Every team's
team.
We're okay with them winning. You guys, we're fine with that.
Okay, look, obviously it's not rigged, but why can't they show a video of that back there? I think everybody would be interested to see that.
You can see it afterwards.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, you can watch video of it afterwards.
I've never seen that. Have you ever seen that?
I've never seen it either, but I had never tapped into the interest to see it either.
Yeah, I never really, I explored whether or not they had that.
They're not going to do that live on TV because it could take forever.
No, I understand.
Drawing out combinations that have already been drawn.
I didn't know they showed it. But again, I never thought that was a conspiracy. Obviously, you're right. You'd have to have a lot of people involved, and why would some teams be helping out the other team? It doesn't make any sense. But yeah, the hopper thing, I mean the envelope thing, yeah. That could be a little shady. I'm not saying it was, but it could be a little shady.
I'm going to say it was.
But the thing.
Sometimes it's just like teams are lucky. You know, the Spurs. They win all those championships with Pop and all that. And then they have a couple lean years and boom, they get Wemby. And Dallas, again, they make the dumbest trade in the world and they're bailed out with Cooper Flagg.
The Spurs have like a great reputation because they've had three number ones and they hit all three. They had David Robinson, which they had to wait 2 years for that one. Then they got
Duncan,
a successful tank for Timmy, and then to come back and do it again with Wemby. In three different decades.
Yeah, but they have timed it.
Incredible track record.
Like, that's the thing. Like, you get the number one pick on a year where it's not a good draft, and you end up with Markelle Fultz, and you're like, well, that was what was the process?
Anthony
the whole
Bennett.
Process didn't work then.
Right.
But there were a lot of misses. Those names I read off, there a lot of them were misses.
And not all for injuries either.
Right.
Again, with the current system we have, there's nothing obviously guaranteed that if you end up with the worst record, you're going to get the number one overall pick. Again, it doesn't happen more than often than it does. And even if you get it, like, you got to make the right pick. And that's that's the other part of it. Like, you have to, again, in this draft, it seems like you can't screw it up. Like, it's going to be somebody really, really good.
That's why even if the Grizzlies don't get the second lottery pick and they keep that pick and don't package it, I think it's going to be a great player. I think they might even get a great player with their early second round pick. That's how deep I think this draft is.
The thing is, too, and I think that's why this year the tanking has gotten probably worse than ever, is because teams look at it and go, we don't need number one. Give us like number six.
Right.
Give me number eight. Like, there's so many good players here. We just want to make sure we're in that lottery and given that opportunity, but make sure that the worst we're going to pick is 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever.
It's like a really good, it's a bunch of options to hit the reset button and make it worthwhile.
Exactly. The Masters is underway from Augusta National, and it's a throwback Thursday so far. Your leader at 200 par through four holes, Jose Maria Olazabal. In second, Angel Cabrera. I don't think those two will end up at the top of the leaderboard when it's all said and done, but you never know. But the action is underway. A cool start to your Thursday morning here in Memphis, and a cool start to the golf at Augusta National. But it will warm up, and the weather is going to be beautiful. It's going to be dry. That means it's going to be fast. It's going to be more challenging for these golfers. Yesterday, they had the par three contest. Aaron Rye was the winner. So you know what that means. No winner of the par three contest has gone on to win the Masters. So do not put a bet on Aaron Rye, even if you're using, what is it, Kalshi?
Kalshi.
There were three holes in one yesterday, and in the par three contest with the hole in one, Keegan Bradley did it for his second year in a row. So I don't know if that will mean Keegan Bradley is one of the players that you may want to look at for action today and throughout the week here at, or not here, but at Augusta National, as he has his second hole in one in 2 years at Augusta National. But again, Aaron Rye won the par three contest yesterday. This is an interesting story. Bryson DeChambeau, who is one of the favorites to win, confirmed to ESPN that he'll play the Masters with a 5-iron that he fabricated himself with a 3D printer. What the hell?
Yeah, he's got a he is weird, man. And now he's got like a club free agent, so he's doing some weird stuff. But that's him.
I mean,
like, there were four hole in ones yesterday, by the way.
Okay, I saw three. We've come a long way since the Persimmon Woods, have we not? Dudes on printers are making clubs. It's blowing my mind, man. I don't know what's happening here.
No, he's doing a lot of weird stuff now that he's a club free agent. Like he can create his own stuff and do whatever. But yeah, that mad mind is working some crazy stuff right now. That par three contest yesterday, the Tommy Fleetwood's kid, dude,
he stole the show.
That kid is. I was rooting so hard for him to hit that, get the ball
Frankie
over the water.
Fleetwood.
I was engrossed in it. I got the whole time. I was like, I couldn't wait for them to get to number nine. I wanted to see him hit it, and I was like rooting so hard. And I just, because now he's got to wait a whole nother year for that opportunity again. And he came so close. And they even cheered for him to get another try. They gave him another try, and he came so close. And I'm like, now he's the poor kid. He's got to wait a whole nother year to give it another try. And it's like, oh, man, it was just like, I felt, but he was so like cool about it. It just, that kid is awesome. He is great.
It's such a,
he got interviewed like four different times.
Oh, I know
yesterday.
He did. I know he did. It's such a great event for these people to let their hair down, to enjoy themselves with the families, and then they come out to the most competitive tournament there is in the game of golf. Yet there's those old purists. I don't even know if I want to give them the positive term of a purist. I should say like old fuddy-duddies that had a problem yesterday with the likes of Kevin Hart out there caddying for Bryson DeChambeau or Jason Kelce out there, like stuffy shirts. I mean, stop it. Did you read the comments of these people? Like, it's Augusta National. You can't be doing that type of thing. Stop it.
Hey, that's Augusta generally has been that way.
But like not on Wednesday. They've loosened their collars. It's a lot of fun. It's probably,
Fred really said it yesterday that when they met, let Dude Perfect come out and do their video on Amen Corner. We probably made the wrong decision.
Well, Fred Ridley's not like Hootie. What is it? Hootie Johnson? Was it Hootie Johnson? The guy Hootie would have never allowed that to happen. They probably would not have allowed these caddies. But I think, look, you don't want to make it a circus. This is the Waste Management Open in Phoenix. But on a Wednesday, I love to see that. It was fun to watch that. And you're right, Little Fleetwood stole the show in that one. There is now a.
Your dad makes a hole in one, and you're the star of the family. That's how good of a day it was for him. I mean, that's crazy stuff right there, man. But I want to know how much money Gary Woodland lost yesterday by being the only one in his group not to make a hole in one, because Justin Thomas said his was $1,000 from each of the other two guys. Wyndham Clark said they had a similar bet in the group. He didn't say how much it was for, though. But Clark and Bradley both made one, and Woodland did not. So I wonder how much money Gary Woodland's out for the par three contest.
By the way, you want to see some beautiful women? Watch the par three contest, and these girlfriends and wives in their caddy outfit, caddying for their husband or boyfriend. Oh, wait, my God.
Wait, golfers have beautiful wives?
Wyndham Clark's.
I'm going to start going to look at this.
Clark's, I guess it's his, either his new wife or girl. Oh, my God.
I'm going to have to go start looking at them at the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how that happens. I mean,
you get to travel around the world, walk around in the sun, and your husband's a millionaire. I wonder why they, how they get the attractive ones.
Well, one thing if it's Wyndham Clark or maybe Max Homa, the other thing if it's Lumpy, if it's like Tim Heron, I don't know what his wife looks like or did in the day, but yeah, it's a pretty sight. It's not only beautiful to watch the leaves and all the beautiful azaleas at the Augusta National, and luckily I've had the pleasure of being there, but also the other sites as well. When we come back, Kerry Miller will join us to talk Major League Baseball, and we'll wrap up the college basketball season with him as well from Bleacher Report. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Diamonds are forever! Woo!
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:28 is the time. Halfway home on this Thursday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. We got lots more to get to. Talked a little about the portal earlier in the show. The Masters is underway. And, of course, the Grizzlies last night falling in Denver 136 to 119. A lot of conversation about tanking. It's still there. It still is persisting. And we have the news yesterday from Shams Charania that there will be the NBA Board of Governors meeting on May 28th where they plan to vote on anti-tanking draft lottery reform. But right now, we want to talk some Major League Baseball and some college hoops with Kerry Miller.
It's time to talk some baseball. Joining Greg and Eli is Kerry Miller from the Bleacher Report. Here's Kerry with Greg and Eli.
He's the dual threat from Bleacher Report. He is Kerry Miller. You can follow him on Twitter at Karen's James. He's also the co-host of the Unnamed Bracketology podcast. He's with us every single Thursday. And now he can concentrate, at least for the most part, Kerry, solely on baseball. How are you?
I'm good. Am I a better runner or passer of the dual threat offense?
You do both very, very well. All right, before we talk baseball, basketball season has come to a conclusion. Before I ask you about the Final Four, what about the Michael Malone hire by North Carolina? Did that knock you back for a loop there?
Yeah, I think it surprised everyone. I forget who it was. Somebody had like mentioned it as like their fifth option is like, oh no, this actually is something they're kicking the tires on, like a couple of days before it happened, and like nobody else said anything, like nobody had a clue it was going to happen, but they just kept getting turned down by spots that usually wouldn't turn down North Carolina. I know Matt Norlander was talking about that, you know, 10 years ago, who would have imagined that the Iowa and Iowa State coaches would say, no thanks, Tar Heels, we're good where we are. But I don't know. I don't know if it's just, it's such a pressure cooker type job, if guys are just happier where they're at, who knows. But yeah, they ended up, feels like they settled, and it feels like they overpaid when we saw the, you know, it was a 6-year, $50 million deal or whatever. I mean, that's what Luis Robert Jr. got as a pre-arbitration extension.
So what are they paying between Malone and Belichick combined?
Yeah,
do you know?
I think I get that the, you know, a lot of people are saying that it's probably going to work out, at least on the Malone front, probably not the Belichick front, but because the college game is becoming more NBA-like, and, you know, it's, everything's a layup or a three-pointer, and everybody's running kind of similar action. So it could work from that perspective. And, you know, it used to be you don't bring in a guy from the NBA because they don't want to be on that recruiting grind. But now you just wait for the top 25 transfers to slide into your DMs. You don't even have to recruit anymore.
Right.
So
right.
I think the roster building has changed to the point that this could work. You don't need the connections and the, you know, the frequent flyer miles that you used to need to build a roster.
Yeah, that's right. It's a pro game. It's the free agency every year. You're just trying to come up with the money to pay each guy, and then you're fine from that. For him to become the second highest paid coach from unemployment is very interesting. You don't normally see that. So from the Final Four, going back to Saturday, how shocked were you at the way Michigan handled Arizona?
Yeah, that was pretty jaw-dropping. Although, in hindsight, I mean, Michigan beat the living heck out of Gonzaga, right, by 40 back in November. And where did Tommy Lloyd come from but Mark Few and Gonzaga? Like, maybe we should have known that you know, Dusty May had the blueprint for slowing down that type of offense. But, yeah, that was stunning. What was it, 10-1 out of the gates? And we were already like, uh-oh. We could start coming up with our column angles now because this does not look good.
We were discussing earlier about the bigs, and Eli was talking about, I guess it was a Goodman story, about what it takes now to get like a top big, maybe 4 to 5 million, and then 3 to 4 for a point guard. And I was bringing up the point that, you know, it's a three-point world we live in now. Basketball's become a three-point game, but we saw in that tournament, and especially in the Final Four, and then in the championship game, how dominant a team can be if they have bigs that are active, that are physical, that block shots, alter shots, and can score. And that's what we saw with Michigan. So maybe, not that the three-point shooting's overblown, because we know how important it is, but to have some really good, talented bigs, as opposed to just serviceable bigs, may be the way to go for most teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why Arizona, Michigan, and Duke were so solid all season long. They each had, you know, multiple super talented big men. Once Terrace Reed Jr. started playing out of his mind, that's when Connecticut really became that title contender once again. So, yeah, I think it's always going to be that the three-point shooting and, like, the red-hot guard is what is, like, the major X factor. Like, you know, Elliott Cadeau was so huge during that Final Four for Michigan, but it's the big men who can just raise your floor
right to
the level that, you know, we saw Arizona and Michigan at all season long. So I get it. They're more valuable. They're more reliable than your, you know, guys who are going to shoot 8 threes in a game.
Did you like Cadeau being the most outstanding player?
Yeah, I thought it was fitting, surprising from the way I kind of called him the ultimate X factor, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde all season long. But that was the point, though. If he can lock in at his, you know, apex, that's how Michigan was going to win it all. So he was phenomenal in the Final Four game. Even though he was like 2 for 14 at halftime, he still ended up with darn near a triple-double, and I think he had 17 points in the title game. Would have had more assists if Michigan could have made a single shot from outside of the paint. But, yeah, I thought he really was the difference maker for them.
Yeah, because a lot of people like wanted Mara because of what he did first in the Final Four game against Arizona when he was unbelievable. And then even though he didn't score much in the championship game and he didn't have a ton of blocks, just the amount of shots he altered and everything else, the impact he had in the paint, some people believed he. And I would have been fine, I think, with either one of the two winning it.
Yeah. Yeah, either one would have been good. Even Morris Johnson was pretty phenomenal in both games as well. But, man, just being there and watching both Johnson and Adai Mara, like, how were these guys coming off the bench at UCLA and Illinois a year ago?
Exactly.
What the heck were those coaches missing? Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, in the end, you've got to, again, I don't know how much of it is them, or maybe it's more the player working, but the player development side of it for Michigan Because Cadeau
and for Dustin May,
Cadeau became a shooter that he was never at North Carolina. Look at those guys who were coming off the bench. Like, certainly, obviously, the player has to work on their game and get better. I don't know how much of it you give credit to the coaching staff versus the player, all that. But from where these guys were to what they ended up being is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think at least in Johnson's case, he was, I felt like a square peg in a round hole at Illinois. Like, they tried to make him a true back to the basket, old school center, and that's not what he is. And I can't possibly explain how, you know, Mick Cronin did not get anything out of Adai Marek. And he was he didn't come out of nowhere. He was a 5-star recruit coming over from Spain, and then just did nothing for 2 years at UCLA. So who knows?
Yeah, they botched that one. But May and the developmental players, you go back to Florida Atlantic. And who's the big goal? Was it Golden and Martin, the guard? And they really developed and flourished under his leadership. I've got to give a lot of credit to Dusty May. Kerry Miller joining us on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line. Okay, this draft, we've talked about it. It's loaded. It looks like it's going to be one of the better drafts that we've had in years. With that said, and knowing that some of the players that are maybe penciled in for late first round, early second round, knowing that they can get a king's ransom staying in college, do you think there is going to be some guys right now that you see in the mock in the first round that are going to end up staying in college?
I think that's plausible, yeah. I think there's more of a, certainly more of an incentive to stay than there used to be. Like, 5 years ago, you'd see guys who average 5 points per game in college, and they're going pro just because they need to get some food on the table for their family. Now it's gone completely the opposite way. Now we've got guys coming over from Europe to to get some money. But yeah, I think we're going to perhaps increasingly see that more fringe guys are staying. Like, I don't know where Lori Badunga is projected to be drafted, but I know he's both in the testing the draft waters, and he's atop the transfer portal rankings. And I kind of think he'll come back just because he doesn't have really that NBA type of game. I think he needs to show that he can shoot a little bit, kind of do what Yaxel Lenderborg did this year for Michigan, becoming more of a perimeter type guy. And I think that could be maybe the top draft projection who ends up coming back. And again, I have no clue where he is projected. I don't pay much attention to mock.
Yeah, just off the top of my head, I look at a guy like Malik Thomas, right? Overshadowed by Acuff, extremely talented player.
Yeah.
He's not penciled in as a lottery pick. If he stayed another year, picked up, $3 million, $3.5 million, whatever it would be, and then next year could be a top 10 player. I'm just thinking out, overall with these guys of what they could really cash in on in the long run by staying an extra year. Now, they may just want to get out, and he certainly can be a first-round pick, but he's not going to more than likely be picked over Acuff or any of those other guards.
Yeah, and as you were kind of alluding to at the beginning of this conversation, the depth of this year's draft class is just insane. So I think there is that case of, if you're projected for somewhere around 25th this year, you could come back and play the exact same game and end up being a lottery pick the following year, probably.
All right, Kerry, how much trouble are my Cubs in with Cade Horton now done for the year? Matthew Boyd's on the injured list. Of course, Justin Steele still trying to work his way back from last year's injury.
Yeah.
How bad is it?
I mean, it's not good. If you had if you had Cubs and Blue Jays or Cubs and Red Sox as your, preseason World Series pairing, you're feeling pretty
terrible
about both of them at the moment. Just they're so beat up. That's what you don't want to see. Like, you can deal with the, slow starts based on just guys aren't firing on all cylinders out of the gates, but you can't be losing guys for the year in early April. That's a problem. And we were already, a little concerned about the Cubs rotation, maybe not so much by the end of the offseason, but certainly heading into it. So for Horton to be, is he officially done for the year? He's having elbow surgery. I assume that's season ending, but yeah, that's not where you want to be. And even though they're 6-6, hey, they're dead last in the NL Central. What the heck?
Yeah. Speaking of that, this is crazy. And you probably already know this, but the National League Central have more teams over 500 than the entire American League. Did you know that?
Wow. I did not. I did know that the Rockies, if they were in the American League, would have the second best run differential.
Wow. But there's four teams in the National League Central other than the Cubs that are over 500. Cubs, as you said, are 500, so it's not horrible. Yeah. Those four teams, well, the American League has three that are over 500 right now. I don't know what's going on. It's early. We're, what, 12, 13, 14 games into the season. But that is really strange. Really strange.
Yeah, and nobody's gone outside of maybe the Dodgers, who we all kind of assume are going to win the NL West. Like, nobody's gone just red hot or ice cold. I think everybody has at least four wins, too. So, like, it's just a right. If this was the basketball, college basketball season, we're at the point in the year where Michigan was struggling with Wake Forest and TCU. So, yeah. I don't think we should make too much out of anything we've seen thus far, anyway.
I did somebody on the Cubs. I saw somebody on Twitter that said the Cubs need to retire the number 22 because Mark Pryor wore it and now Cade Horton's wearing it.
Jeez.
It's not looking good for that number. Apparently, that number also automatically makes your arm fall apart.
Yeah. Do you hang it in the rafters or you just like burn it in an eternal flame nobody uses it?
I think you burn it forever and just like, Horton's already had Tommy John in his past.
Yeah.
So now he's having this and they don't even know for sure what they have to do until they get in there. I'm really worried about what his future could be.
Yeah.
Shohei. Go ahead, Gary.
Oh, I was just going to say, you hope it's not like another Grayson Rodriguez type of situation.
They have had the Cubs' history. I mean, you know a lot better than I do, Eli, but it just seemed like so many pitchers with so much potential that end up getting hurt, from Kerry Wood to Pryor to all those guys. Shohei, 28 and two-third innings now is the current scoreless innings streak pitched. Number one in all of Major League Baseball. Right now, he is off to a tremendous start. The bat a little bit slow, but the arm has been dominant, and the Dodgers are 9-3.
Yeah, and I was watching that game yesterday, and I think pitching ninja Rob Friedman tweeted something similar. It's like, kind of feels like he's struggling here, and then he goes like six scoreless innings, allowed like four hits. Like that's what the bar is now for Shohei Ohtani. Like, if it's not a no hitter with three home runs, we're just not impressed anymore.
One team that is really struggling. The Mariners. What's going on with the Mariners? Raleigh finally hit his first home run the other day. 4-9, bottom of the American League West.
Yeah, they've been on, if it's not the longest skid in the majors right now. I know they've lost five in a row, and within the division, you never want to see that. But yeah, they're just struggling to put runs on the board, which wasn't supposed to be the case with bringing back Josh Naylor. They were really hoping some of those younger guys would be better than they are. I think they still have some holes in that lineup. Rivas isn't doing anything when he plays at second base, and Naylor really struggled. You mentioned Raleigh finally homered. Julio still hasn't homered. So yeah, that's one of those cases where you don't want to worry too much because at least they're healthy. But yeah, I don't know why they're really struggling to find their swing out of the gate.
What do you think about the Pirates giving Connor Griffin the deal that they gave him? Are the Pirates going to start really spending some money now?
Yeah, I actually just pitched an idea to my editor about ranking the best and worst pre-arbitration extensions like in MLB history. There haven't been that many. I think it's plausible that I could pull that off. But we're seeing that more and more.
Yeah.
Teams just giving guys these crazy deals beforehand, but so many of them in the past have worked out beautifully. Like, look at the deal that Ronald Acuña Jr.'s on for the Braves. Like, if the Nationals had signed Connor Griffin or had signed Juan Soto to a Connor Griffin contract, he'd still be there.
Yeah.
And I'd be a happier baseball fan over the last 6 years. So I think there's, if you're able to identify that talent early on, you got to lock it in because otherwise they're just going to get more and more expensive.
And that's why I wonder where Skeens, are doing this. Does that convince Skeens that like the Pirates are invested
enough?
That's
what I want to know.
Down the road, will he end up staying there or will he be like everybody else and leave?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to take a discount any more than I think Tarek Skubal is going to take a discount to stay at Detroit. But I do think, I haven't looked at the exact numbers of the historical pre-arbitration deals, but the vast majority of them are position players. Like, nobody wants to invest in a pitcher beforehand because you get your Pryors and your Woods and these guys who are broken within 6 years. You very rarely see that with position players. So I think he, I'm sure at some level, understands it, and I'm sure he's demanding, if they are going to sign him, like, you're going to pay me out the wazoo, and they're probably just not willing to do that.
So if I said Strasburg, would that open up a wound for you?
You know, come on.
Sorry. And... sorry.
We're still paying Strasburg him for another
3 years.
Well, I know, it's great. Well, yeah, don't get me started about paying salaries. I mean, they're still paying friggin' what you call it, Bobby Bonilla. Major League Baseball's average salary, according to the story I'm reading from the Associated Press, rose 3.4% on opening day this year. Do you guys take a guess at what the average salary is in baseball?
Average payroll or like
no for per player, individual player, what is the average salary in 2026? The average salary.
$7.5 million.
I'll go over that. I'm going to say around 10.
No, it's 5.34. I wasn't that high. I thought it would have been higher too, but 5.34.
So like,
what's the minimum?
70% of every team is on a league minimum, like $800,000 deal. So it's just, it's just a numbers game.
I was thinking the minimum was up to like $1.5 million.
Yeah,
minimum's
not even over a million, huh?
Yeah, I think it's $820,000.
Yeah, I was thinking of the minimum. I was thinking the minimum was like, literally like a million and a half, 2 million. That's why I thought the average would be up there. But
all right, one more trivia for you. Let's see who gets it right.
Oh, boy.
Okay. We know that Juan Soto is the highest paid player. Second straight year, he's averaging he's getting $61.9 million this year. I don't think you guys will get this one. Who is the second highest paid player this year?
I mean,
in the American, Robert. I'll say it's in the American League.
I was going to say Bo Bichette, if we're counting the $15 million.
Bo Bichette is tied for whatever. Yeah, he's tied for third. That was good on your part. He's tied for third, but this guy is second behind Soto, and he's well behind Soto.
Is it Vlad Jr.?
It is not. Vlad Jr. though is fifth.
All right, I'm going to fill out the top 10 eventually, but probably still miss number two if it's a trivia question.
You got a guess, Eli? He's with a team you would think has a pretty good payroll in the American League. Surprising to me.
Is it Garrett Cole?
No, it's Cody Bellinger. $42.5 million. What? He's paid more than Aaron Judge?
Yeah.
Aaron's at 40.
He keeps getting a new deal.
Some crazy salary. Where's Kyle Tucker on that? I guess they got the deferral or whatever worked out.
Yeah, that's probably with the deferral, they count the deferral out of it.
Yeah, I didn't see him. Wheeler and Bichette are tied for third. Vlad's fourth, and Aaron Judge Vlad would be fifth, and then Aaron Judge would be sixth. Right here, the Mets payroll, by the way, number one this year at $352.2 million, which is just below the record that they set in 2023 at $355.4. Just funny money, right? Monopoly
like 18 money. 18 games below 500.
Exactly. Here's Gary Miller. He writes for Bleacher Report. He covers both college basketball and Major League Baseball. He is our insider for both. You can follow him on Twitter at Karen's James. He's also the co-host of the Unnamed Bracketology podcast. Another great season of giving you all the insight from college basketball. So make sure you always check that out. Check him out on Twitter and listen to him every Thursday right here on Sports 56 Mornings. Have a great week, Kerry.
You got it. Take care, guys.
You too.
Folks, it's breakfast time. If you're thinking breakfast here in Memphis, you should always be thinking sunrise. But not just breakfast, you can lunch as well. Open for breakfast and lunch daily from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Two locations, Jefferson Avenue downtown and Sunrise East on Poplar Avenue in East Memphis. Great breakfast sandwiches with those big old biscuit sandwiches that they've got, or maybe it's one of their breakfast bowls or the kitchen sink. Lunch menu that includes a lot of great sandwiches and salads. If you go to sunrise901.com, you could check out the entire menu. You can also order online to make it easy for you to pick up some food on your way to work or wherever you might be headed and do it very quickly. You order online, you get there, you pop in the side door, you grab your food, and you are on your way. Get sunrise901.com. Also, some information on there about catering. You could order catering online as well on the website at sunrise901.com. The original 670 Jefferson Avenue, Sunrise East is 5469 Poplar Avenue in East Memphis. You can open 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. for breakfast and lunch daily at Sunrise.
You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255.
Guns, guns, and more guns. Over 700 firearms in
56 mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
Genuine diamonds, baby.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Only two guys under par still early on in the first round of the Masters. 29 guys are on the golf course. And the only two that are under par are Jose Maria Olazabal at 2 under par through 6 and Kurt Kitayama at 1 under through 4. So obviously not real easy right now, the conditions as things get going here. You've got coming up in the next hour, 9:07, Bryson DeChambeau, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Xander Schauffele will go out, followed by at 9:19, Hideki Matsuyama, Colin Morikawa, for as long as his back will hold up, and Russell Henley. And then at 9:31, Rory McIlroy, Cameron Young, and the amateur champion Mason Howell will go at 9:31. So coming up here, starting the next hour, three pretty good groups right in a row. I'll be interested to see if Colin Morikawa can make it through one round, let alone four. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of faith in that back holding up for him.
We were talking yesterday about Gary Woodland and his story, and it would be incredible. I don't think he's going to come close to winning this thing, but it would be something. I mean, he did win on tour a couple of weeks ago. What other stories, what other players winning would make great stories, in your opinion? Where are the great stories that we could see, depending on the results of this tournament?
Well, any of the old guys. I don't think any of them are going to win, but any of the old guys would
Yeah, I don't think BJ Singh's winning.
Would be great stories.
An amateur, a first-timer, that's so rare, right? That would be something.
Yeah, first-timer, I mean, any first-time major winner. Rory going back-to-back.
Is DeChambeau would be a very popular win, but I don't know if it would be a popular win amongst the golf purists because of the whole LIV thing.
I think people, he's generally done a pretty darn good job of changing people's views of him.
I think he's beloved by a lot of people, but I just think the whole LIV connection doesn't sit well. I wonder about, could Koepka, could he actually, we know Koepka is big tournament Koepka. Can he compete at the Masters? His majors are not, he didn't win at Augusta. In fact, I don't even know what his track record is at Augusta. We know he's done pretty well everywhere else.
Well, he's had success at Augusta. I mean, he had the chance to be very easily could have or should have won it the year Tiger did. But I just don't think his game right now is ready to be competing in majors at any place. It just doesn't, you know. I know Wyndham Clark mentioned yesterday that he has just, I guess, switched putting coaches or just is now using, I think, his putting coach. So I don't know where things stand. But I just don't – since he's been back, I don't think his game has been nearly good enough to be competing at a Masters.
Few other baseball notes we didn't get to with Carey. Jorge Soler, Ronaldo Lopez each got 7-game suspensions for that brawl Tuesday out in Anaheim. Both are appealing the suspensions. But are you surprised it was that many? 7 each?
Seems like a pretty high number, but I think they seem to be maybe trying to hand down some bigger numbers for that. Of course, with Lopez, it's a lot different when you're a pitcher versus a guy like Soler. So we'll see what happens on appeal. But I do think they are wanting to get that out of the game.
Jordan Walker hit another home run yesterday for the Cardinals. So all you Cardinals fans out there, hits his fifth home run. I think it was his second in two games as the Cardinals defeated the Washington Nationals. And also former Dodgers great Davey Lopez passed away. No, not Davey Lopes. What am I saying? Davey Lopez. Davey Lopes passed away at the age of 80. Four-time All-Star, World Series champion in 1981. Those Dodger teams were fantastic with Ron Say at third, Bill Russell at short, Davey Lopes at second, Steve Garvey at first, Joe Ferguson and Steve Yeager splitting time behind the plate. Yeah, let's see, who do they have in the outfield? They had, was Dusty Baker with him at that time? Rick Monday, maybe? I forget the outfield. Reggie Smith, I don't know. But the infield was, they were all-stars. I remember the one year they were all-stars, all four of them in the infield. That was a really, really good run for the Dodgers during that time. I think it was also coincided with Fernando Mania, if I'm not mistaken. I get my years mixed up. But, yeah, Davey Lopes was a heck of a player for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Passed away at the age of 80. Wow.
When he got traded to the Cubs in 84, one, I was like, he wore the helmet without the ear flap. I thought that, and I think he was one actually wore the hat under the helmet, which was one of those very rare guys back then. But I always liked the guys that didn't have the ear flap on the helmets for whatever reason. And that always talked. But I remember when he got traded to the Cubs, that dude looked like he was 60 years old. I think at that time he was probably, well, he had to be around 40. 41.
Mm-hmm.
He, or I guess, 39? He was 80 now. So, yeah. But he, when I remember when he got to, I was like, man, they acquired a 60-year-old. They went out and got a 60-year-old guy. He looked so old at that time. Obviously, he was old by baseball player standards.
Right.
But he just looked really old.
He reminded me of John Oates of Hall & Oates. 2 hours in the books, hour three on the way. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Did you miss your favorite Sports 56 show?
No!
Check out the podcast, broken down hourly, at sports56whbq.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. Never miss any Sports 56 show again with our podcasts available daily from Sports 56 and 98.5.